Yeah, sorry about the Star Wars films. I want to start by thanking the EFF for having me here to deliver. I'm just fulfilling expectations. I want to start by thanking the EFF for asking me to be here and deliver this keynote. I've been a supporter and true believer in your mission since its inception. I was lucky enough to be at your 20th birthday party and party with John Perry Barlow, whose long-distance vision of the promise and perils of the internet was prescient, to say the least. I'm humbled to be in the room with tonight's award winners, each heroes in their own right. Specifically, Mr. Gibson, if you knew how much your books meant to my early days in San Francisco, they equate to me at 24, first coming here in 1990, and the city that I found when I moved here. And so I want to thank you personally for all the time I've spent and the realities that you have weaved. I wanted to talk tonight about facts and stories. I've had a lot of different jobs and even careers in my life so far. Even in hosting Mythbusters for 14 years on Discovery Channel, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what that job actually was. In the first season, newly divorced and going through the particular insanity that befalls all of the recently divorced, 3 months into filming, I stopped dating entirely just to hunker down and figure out what this new endeavor of hosting a TV show was asking from me, what I had to contribute to it. And the answer would take me more than a decade. At first, I thought I was there to build stuff and talk about it. And then I realized maybe my job is to concoct entertaining scientific methodologies and execute them and talk about them. And then I thought it was to make something explode in every episode. That may have come from a note from the network. In 2006, I met Neil deGrasse Tyson for the first time and did his podcast. And I was sitting across from him, watching him go and thinking, look at this guy. He is like an arrow pointed towards a goal of illuminating science for people. To use a phrase from Mr. Gibson, he is vat grown for this job. He is a science communicator. What a great mission. Wait a minute, I'm a science communicator. What a cool mission. Albeit I'm a science communicator with only a high school diploma. In 2008, we filmed an episode called Lead Balloon, in which we made a 14-foot diameter balloon out of 28 pounds of rolled lead. No explosions, no fire. And when we talked to editorial about this episode, they expected that the cut for the lead balloon portion of the episode would maybe be 15 minutes. The first rough cut of Lead Balloon was 55 minutes long. The final cut was so thrilling and rated really well. And I realized that one of the key things that made this episode great was Jamie's and my enthusiasm. If we were engaged, it turns out, so was the audience. And that's when I started wearing more costumes on the show. And it's when Jamie started asking questions that had no myth at all attached to them, like, oh, if you could put square wheels on a car, how fast would you have to go to get a smooth ride? It took us 2 tries. The first try, all 4 of the brakes fell off the car at the same time. An injury I would have trouble doing if you asked me to do it on purpose. On the second try, the answer is 38 miles an hour. It wasn't until season 11 that I realized the simplicity of my job. Storytelling. We were there to tell a story about the search for a hidden truth, to quote Raymond Chandler. Often a hidden truth in something absurd. That, in fact, it turns out, was all I had ever done for a living. When I spent several years as a graphic designer, and every designer will tell you this, the final design works, not because it has the proper information, but because that information tells a story to the person who's looking at it. Your eye is guided to the right parts of the design at the right time. Instead of using time to tell a story, like in a movie, a graphic designer uses space to parcel out the information so our brains can process it. When I was working as a model maker in commercials and films, making spaceships, attaching little details to a ship, we called them greeblies. Every single greebly has to have a story attached to it. And that story has to be known by the model maker gluing that Greebly to that ship, otherwise it won't work aesthetically. Because the surface details on the Millennium Falcon tell a very different story than the surface details on the Enterprise. The model maker is required to know that story, otherwise the story won't scan. And on MythBusters, the story was one of scientific discovery, but of also personal discovery. It was about watching Jamie and Carrie, Tori, Grant, and I, Jesse, and the entire team confront new ideas and new materials and collaborating and learning what they can do and seeing what we can learn from them. Stories are what make us human. I think that we invented language in order to tell stories. I think the story is the first mover. We don't prioritize stories enough culturally, in my opinion. Every one of us has been annoyed by the self-proclaimed science geek who simply spits out facts they found on Reddit that day. It is an easy mistake to make because we are trained in school to think like this. Fields like math and science and geography are most often taught in public schools as monolithic groups of facts to memorize by the test next Tuesday. And when you make people memorize endless math tables or state capitals or the freezing point of elements, you lead them to believe a terrible thing, that facts equal knowledge. But they don't. Knowledge comes from taking facts and putting them in a context with each other. That context is a narrative. I have a great example. My high school freshman earth science teacher, Dan Frere, was telling us about glaciers, and he was trying to explain the features you saw in glaciers as they were moving, and he was trying to explain how slowly they moved, and he said to us, the best way to picture a glacier is it's a river on Quaaludes. It was the 80s. In fact, it was so long ago, I would go to Dan Frere's class at lunchtime because I didn't have any friends, and I would pepper him with questions about science, and he would sit there and chain smoke in school while grading papers. This is a different time. Wait a second, where was I? Quaaludes, yes. This is a beautiful way to talk about glaciers because it actually gave me a deep understanding of the physics of a glacier in one sentence. He took facts and he put them in a story and gave my brain that story for the rest of my life. Having told stories in the service of both art and science, I feel uniquely qualified, and you should know I feel uniquely qualified for very few things. I feel uniquely qualified to tell you that I've come to understand that far from being at either end of a spectrum of human experience, people often say, oh, it's both an art and a science. And what we do when we say that is we place those things in opposition to each other and at a distance from each other. And what I've come to understand is that science and art are simply both ways of telling stories, and for the same reason. We use these stories to figure out the shape of the universe around us. I'm telling you all of this to talk about what I see as the two important missions that the EFF has been fulfilling throughout its tenure. One is, of course, the legal and logistical aspect of their job, fighting in court, writing amicus briefs, and tirelessly using the tools available to them to help all of us enjoy a safer internet with proper privacy, autonomy, and genuine dignity. But in addition, in order to wake up the public to the realities of the problem, it's not enough to recount just the facts, ma'am. We have to make compelling arguments for why we need privacy and safe spaces, as well as free speech and openness. And in addition to the legal vanguard it occupies, the EFF is also always working to help people understand what they are fighting for and how the issues affect them. In order to understand a thing, we need to see our place in and adjacent to it. And this is arguably the most difficult part of their job. Tonight's award winners are here for the fight, and just as much, they are here for the stories. Because it is a universal human truth that when we share and listen to each other's stories, the world moves forward in a positive way. We are living through a difficult and critical time. I now truly understand the meaning of the famous curse, may you live in interesting times. And I am genuinely not sure that we're going to make it out of this. It is the central fact of my current and probably all of our current existence. But if we make it out, and I believe this with my whole heart, if we do make it out, it'll be because we have listened to each other's stories and connected with realities different than ours, than the ones we might occupy, and we have worked hard to let all of those stories be told. I hope we do. Thank you so much, DFF, and thank you for your time.